committee.
Yeah, well, I'm supporting Trump.
But I'm not.
No, I shouldn't.
I'm going to call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for this beautiful February 22nd. We should be outside rather than here.
Yep.
The sun is shining. And I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 1504, Senate Bill 1504A. Madam Administrator, what have we got?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1504A comes to you from the Senate with a floor vote of 25 ayes, 3 noes, and 2 excused. The bill enacts the Interstate Physical Therapy Licensure Compact. It permits Physical Therapist Licensing Board to disclose specified information to the Compact Commission, exempts individuals practicing physical therapy in the state under the compact from restrictions of use of the title, allows the board to establish an account to meet the financial obligations imposed on Oregon as a result of participation in the compact, continuously appropriates money from the account to the board for specified purposes, declares an emergency effective on passage, no revenue impact, Mr. Chair, and a minimal fiscal impact.
Could you call the first panel, please?
James Hyder, Steve Allstott.
The first panel, the full panel?
The first panel is the full and only panel.
And the second and the third panel.
First and last.
Oh, breaks my heart.
Hey.
Good afternoon. Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is James Hyder. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Physical Therapist Licensing Board. And I'm here today to talk to you, to tell you that the board has continued support for SB 1504. If you'll remember back in November in the fall, we were here with the Professional Association represented and a representative from the National Regulatory Association, Federation of State Boards of Physical Therapy. And at that time, we shared the merits of the compact to you. And in addition to the board's support, the good thing about the interesting thing about the compact is that it allows a physical therapist or a physical therapist assistant who has been fully credentialed in another state and duly licensed in that state with a license, an unencumbered license for a minimum of 2 years in that state, to be given privilege to practice physical therapy or work as a physical therapist assistant in the state of Oregon without having to achieve full licensure. So it's an expedited process. However, it's important to remember that even though they're given privilege here, the state of Oregon still has regulatory authority over that license. They must practice under the statutes of the state and the rules of the state, and the board can take action against that privilege. If a privilege is removed in Oregon, their privilege is removed in every state that they may also hold other privileges. The board's primary mission, the Physical Therapist Licensing Board's primary mission, is protection of the public, and our board feels strongly that protection of the public includes access to care, to qualified care, and we feel that this board will increase access to care. So the board, the PT Licensing Board, is asking the committee's consideration to move this bill forward, and I'd be happy to answer any questions for the panel. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Chair Greenlick, committee members, for the record, my name is Steve Allstott. I'm here representing the Oregon Physical Therapy Association, and the Physical Therapy Association is in full support of this bill and the Physical Therapy Licensure Compact. We feel it's really will eliminate barriers to care, and at the same time, it will continue to enhance patient safety. It also recognizes today's modern mobile workforce and will allow people a little bit easier access to come into another state and work, but be licensed and still guarantee that there's protection of the public. We also feel it can enhance the use of telemedicine and telehealth by having a practitioner from one state who's licensed be able to work with a patient in that other state. In addition, I'm also a partner in a private outpatient physical therapy practice. We have 8 clinics, and 4 of those are in Washington, and 4 of those are in Oregon. And just as a business person and also someone who hires physical therapists, there's a lot of delay and barriers to people seeking an additional license. There's administrative costs and then just time to get that licensure. And this would allow a little bit more expedient use of having our workforce go from one state to the other, but protect the public and have them licensed and know that they're safe to practice. It'll also help those individuals that are looking to relocate to another state to be able to come into that state a little faster and therefore be able to take that job, be able to come into that area, get situated, have the job, and be able to be a little bit more mobile where they're able to work depending on where that work is available. Thank you.
Other questions?
No.
I have a couple. In your story, is it safe to assume that could only happen if the other state had already signed up as a part of the compact?
Chair Greenlee, that is correct. They would only be able to move into Oregon if the other state was a compact state, and with the bill as it is, there needs to be a minimum of 10 states to form the commission. So once there are 10 states, there will be a commission, and the commission will vet the person's interest to have privilege in Oregon. Say it's a Washington, Oregon are both in the compact, and they would maintain their Washington license. They would maintain the CE in Washington. Washington will have credentialed them, but then they would have privilege to practice in Oregon.
Are we the first state to sign the compact?
If this committee chooses by their good graces to move this forward, yes, we will be the first state to enter the compact. I have had conversations with my counterparts in Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and California. And Washington, Idaho, and Nevada are prepared to move this forward in their 2017 legislations. California is kind of on the fence right now. They've got a lot of things going.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to testify on this? I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1504A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1504A. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that Senate Bill 1504A be sent to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves Senate Bill 1504A.
I just want to make a comment.
When you're ready, Rep. Bueller has a comment.
Go ahead.
To the floor with a new pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Bueller.
Yes, thank you, Chair Greenlick. I'm very supportive of this concept, and I hope to bring a similar concept for physicians in the 2017 legislature. There's a very vigorous medical licensure interstate compact already formed and has numerous states involved.
Be interesting to see how the association reacts to that.
I've been trying to vet that.
Is there any other discussion?
Just, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Just a comment. I think this is a great step forward for physical therapists as a profession, and hopefully it does set the tenor for greater cooperation because these artificial boundaries don't really make sense in the professional world.
Okay. Thank you. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Klim?
Absent.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Kitty Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Wiley?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nose?
Aye.
And Chair Green?
Aye. Motion carries. Somebody like to carry this on the floor? A volunteer, Representative Lively?
I do.
Okay.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 1504A. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1504A and open the work session on Senate Bill 1503A.
It works.
Send it easy.
Blue man's on, Mr. Chair.
Let's reconvene, please. We're in a work session on Senate Bill 1503A. Let's have a motion on the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would like to move Senate Bill 1503A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Darn, I knew I'd forget something.
We amended it, right?
Yes, we adopted the amendments last week. The A2s.
Representative Noce moves Senate Bill 1503A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick. We've looked at this bill very closely, as we're aware. It's gone back and forth here and come down to today. I think it's important that we do have the same amount of funds being provided for equal work. The question here is this equal work. One of the responsibilities I think that we have is to look at our rural communities and say, how can we get the best quality health care that we can in our rural communities? And so I would encourage the organizations that work with these, along with their insurance companies, to continue the process of looking at pay equity, more of a global reform in the structure of how insurance companies pay their providers as we go further down the road of transformation. I think it would be inappropriate at this point to disrupt what they have, so I'm going to support this bill to let it continue, not to remove the sunset. But I do stress that I want to see more communication between the different parties here come together and talk about transformation and how the pay structure is provided to the providers to encourage more assets available for our rural health communities, which is difficult to get to. Thank you.
Thank you. So some of you may be surprised that I will support this bill too. This comes out of a lot of thinking about this bill over the last 3 years. First and foremost, I want to say how much respect and fondness I have for our chair and our vice chair. You have this vice chair too, but the two that have really carried the water on this and are passionate about it. I do want to say that I still have some of the same concerns that I had when the bill first came up in terms of looking at what fair compensation is and recognizing the years of study that psychiatrists and family docs and osteopathic physicians have. I do resonate with the letter that's in the materials from the osteopathic physicians and surgeons of Oregon about how, you know, we're making permanent a policy that standardizes payments across practitioners that have different educational, credentialing, insurance, and certification requirements. That has always given me concern. I've always preferred, as opposed to a strict mandate, something that had a little more flexibility, like the Medicare system that sets an 85% floor. And I think that we need to continue working to develop a comprehensive policy to address provider reimbursement that takes all these things into account. So the issue, one of the main issues I had several issues that I was specifically concerned about. One was cost. I actually feel that I'm not as concerned about cost as I used to be. I thought that would raise the whole cost. But I do think that, and I think this case has been made very effectively over the last few years, that we need so much more resources in rural areas in particular. We need to shift the balance from the specialized to our money that goes into specialized into primary care. And this is one way to do it. My concern along this has been, the concerns I still have are around workforce and how that might affect quality. And I'm a big believer in the patient-centered primary care home where you have psychiatrists and you have doctors who are a part of that team. And so when they do have higher malpractice and student debt and things like that, I am worried about our ability, if we have a strict nurse parity, PA nurse parity, to continue to attract physicians to be a part of that team. And I think going forward, we should continue to look at this. I was a part of trying to craft the dash A5s, which was looking at workforce disaggregated by provider type to make sure that we had the kind of workforce that we feel that we need going forward to have that kind of quality and teamwork. And that, unfortunately, came with a fiscal. I tried to pare the fiscal back by saying, why don't we start it? Because we won't really know the impact on workforce for probably a few years. Start it in 2018, do it every other year, but it would have still put a fiscal on it, which would send it to Ways and Means and put the bill at risk. So I recognize that. The other issue I've always been concerned about is access. When you have in the Medicaid, you have nurse practitioners and doctors paid the same. And then in the commercial market, you had doctors paid a lot more. Well, we saw that doctors took on fewer Medicaid patients. I have been concerned that that might happen. Again, if nurse practitioners can make a lot more or PAs can make a lot more in the commercial market, I've been concerned about what the access would do to the Medicaid. So those are the concerns I have. I think that going forward, I hope that we continue to discuss this. I've had some talks with Katie King and Brian Niebert, who might be here, and thank you, and your budget director, Bill Colomb, about their commitment going forward to continue to track these kind of things, because they're concerned about it too. And I know going forward, those are the kinds of things, whether we have a bill or not, that they're going to keep their eye on. So with that, I'm going from a no in the past to a yes. And that's it, I guess, unless there are any questions.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, Tim Bueller.
My main concern right now with the healthcare delivery system in Oregon is the lack of adequate access to primary care. And I'm uncertain if this bill will increase it or decrease it. It's just going to be interesting to see if people choose primary care when they can make the equivalent amount and just go to graduate school 2 years versus going to 8 years as 4 years in medical school and 4 years in residency. Having said that, I'm going to support it because I think increasing the pay to primary care is what we need, and this is one way to do it. But I would encourage all of us to continue to focus on ways that we can increase the reimbursement to primary care, no matter if it's done by a nurse practitioner or a physician, and probably even more importantly, focus on real payment methodology reform, where no matter what your level of training is, you're paid according to your performance. And I think that's what we should all strive. So I encourage the advocates and interest groups to keep on working with regards to that specific element, which I see as a little bit high-centered right now with regards to our healthcare transformation on payment methodology reform.
A lot of work coming on that area. Representative Wiseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looks like a lot of people have switched on this, and I might be the only no vote coming out of committee today, but I just have struggle with the pay parity issue. And one of the things I see that happens lots of times, we'll start dropping reimbursement rates and we start losing general practitioners because it's tough for them to make it because of all the extra school that they do have to go through and everything. And to say that two people doing the same thing bring the same thing to the patient at the time, I think, is a little disingenuous, but it's true for some things. But there are lots of things that a doctor can pick up that maybe a nurse wouldn't pick up. I think is what we need to do is look at how we're funding and paying for these things. And nurses are paid this amount, and nurse practitioners paid this amount, and a doctor's paid this amount. And these things are expected when a doctor does it, when a nurse practitioner does it, or a nurse does it. For things that they can look at. So it's not so much me, it's the payment system. I see we need to change the payment system in general, mm-hmm. and stop pitting doctors against nurses or nurse practitioners against doctors or nurse practitioners against nurses, and actually start paying people for what they bring to the table. And I think everybody here, after listening to everybody speak, is in the same place. It's just, how do we do that? And this, I look at when we say pay parity, I don't think helps us that much. So, I mean, I'm going to be a no for those reasons. I want to pay nurses more, want to pay nurse practitioners
more.
Yes,
it solves the problem.
So if I truly thought it solved the problem, Chair, I would be a yes, 100%.
Representative Kenmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think it was a difficult bill back in 2013, and that's why we put Sunset on it to bring it forward and take a look at whether or not it was doing what we needed to do. And we were also faced with an incredible labor shortage. I think it's proven its value. It's not a perfect solution, but I think it's a very good one, and I support it.
Yeah, I'd like to echo sort of the comments here. If I really believe in equal pay for equal work, and if the question is that under the fee-for-service world, when you have a particular code, and nurse practitioner has the same code for a service that the psychiatrist has, that ought to be equal work. Now, if there's a coding problem, if you need to deal with severity, for example, and you need to find ways to code higher severity cases with a different code, you would end up maybe with psychiatrists seeing more of the high-intensity patients than psychiatric nurse practitioners, or you might not. But the ultimate solution, I think, is, as was stated, is to get away from the fee-for-service system and find some other way to pay for these services, which would make a lot more sense. Oh, where's that Clem?
I
need to write again.
Sorry.
I'm really engaged in other topics, so haven't unfortunately been paying as much attention. Probably for today I'll give it a yes, reserving my right to change my vote on the floor after I have a little more chance to look into the successes or not so far of the program as it's rolled out in the time since we last passed it.
You were the first one I know that had a courtesy no one.
Yeah. So. I almost did it on the floor the other day on minimum wage, actually. Courtesy no.
All right. Any other discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Whiteley?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
No.
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Clem?
Yes.
That's a shock. Yes.
Yes.
Vice Chair
Knos?
Yes.
And Chair
Greenberg? Yes. Motion carries. There's a Knos. Will you carry it on the floor?
Heck yeah.
Representative Knos, will we carry it?
I don't mind. I don't need to.
Let's get back. In a minute. Hold on. Everybody hang in. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1403A. And take a motion to suspend the rules so Representative Clem can vote on Senate Bill 1504A.
Did you just make the motion, or do I need to?
Somebody needs to make it.
All right. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we suspend the rules and open the work session back up on Senate Bill 1504A for the purposes of allowing Representative Clem to vote.
Is there any objection? So, rule, would you call?
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Motion continues to carry, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1504A. And
we'll make one announcement.
We can answer. I was about to make an answer about Wednesday. What other announcements we want?
Well, has it been determined that it's Wednesday? Are we talking about the joint?
I can read a three.
No.
Okay. I can go catch my customer before he goes.
We were going to have a hearing on Wednesday, which we are not going to have. Stay tuned, because the Revenue Committee has asked us to hold a joint session with them on the question of an informational hearing on the e-cigarette tax. So that it's up to the Revenue Committee to set that, and we have not heard from them.
Right, and they meet at the same time we do, so your schedules should be, if you want to participate, will be blocked out. They're 1 to 2:45, and it will either be Wednesday or Friday of this week.
They're still working on bills, I think, right? Because
they're
not still
sure.
Alive. Yeah, the Revenue Committee is still
alive.
Are
we meeting Wednesday?
Only if it's a joint with Revenue.
Okay.
Yeah.
About vaping.
I also hope to have next week, if we're still here next week, a couple of possible informational hearings, and we'll inform you. But at the moment, there's no plan for a meeting on Wednesday or Friday at the moment. We're adjourned.
Right on.
Maybe sunny time.